the shit I want to say. So, you know how the Mezirat Shemag used to say Torah? Mezirat Shemag, it would go like this. People would come for Shabbos to his shtut. And the Gabbe or the Rebbe himself, I'm not sure, it's a shal, if it was Gicha Kodesh or Badeir Chateva, but they would find out somehow what everyone wants. Everyone would bring a kvittel and write down the kvittel was what the issues. And then the Rebbe would come to the Tish on Shabbos, and you would say a Dvar Torah. And betoch the Dvar Torah, you would fa'em for everyone's kashas. You would give everyone what they specifically need. And he might have even said explicitly, this is for you, that's for you, since you need this, since you need that, and so on. Some people write it as a Richa Kodesh story, that he knew somehow magically what everyone needs.
Does Maimon discuss this?
Yes. Some people describe it as a good teaching mahalach, but that was the mahalach. You get the mahalach, man.
Old reading, hat reading, we'll call it.
No, I'm not talking about the chachma. See, that's why I told you that, so you shouldn't think that that's the point. Who cares? The point is not that the Rebbe weiss. The point is that if you say Torah to other people, then there's always a question. Sometimes it's an unasked question, right? We do a lot of work on figuring out what the questions were that we were really asking. Most of the time we don't really know what they are. Or it's very hard to ask them. You could read Mrs. Collard's book about why it's so hard to ask all the real questions that are interesting.
Which book?
Mrs. Collard. It's called... Sorry, now you have a book to read. You asked me which book to read.
That you've solved my problem. It's here. Amazing.
You see?
Just like the Rebbe.
100%. It's true. It's called the Open Socrates. Agnes Collard. Agnes Collard is a teacher, a professor at U Chicago. And she wrote a book, and she's Osik, and she has a million podcasts and all kind of different footsteps.
Case of the philosophical life.
And the basic question problem that she talks about is
looks good.
That there are some good questions or basic questions that it's very hard to ask. To answer is not hamadraig. But even to ask, just to ask them the whole question, she has a solution to the problem also. She promotes a certain solution, which she claims is a Socrates solution. But anyways, that's Marimukam. It's a good book, and she writes clearly, and she gets across her ideas, and she gets you into a certain basic philosophical mindset very well.
Just put that hold in the library.
So, anyways, that's what we're saying. So there's always a question, right? Everything is an answer to a question. And the whole Torah is an answer to a question. We heard this through Shemini already, right? Why don't we understand the whole Torah? Because we don't have the questions that it came to answer. So we think that it's just some kind of kufalem hakigigas. Drop something on your head and just do it. Literally. Turns out there was a question, and this is an answer to the question.
We discover the question by terms.
We always discover the question. One second, I'll talk about this in a second. Go one thing at a time. But first let's finish with the Mezirat Shemag. And sometimes only from the answer we discover what the question was. Precisely because the question without the answer is very hard to hold, very hard to get hold of. Aside from being scary and apikarsis and all kind of problems like that, it's hard to get hold of. And sometimes just from the answer we even get hold of it. I do think that this Mezirat Shemag, it's Mahalach, which is not the only teacher that acted this way. I've read descriptions of different teachers who acted in similar ways. There's two dinim in this, right? Let's try to understand. There's two dinim in this Maase. Two parts. The first then is that he didn't answer your questions when you asked them to you. You noticed. It's describing the story in the way that I describe it, that everyone would come with a kvittel and listen to the Rebbe. My wife needs a shidduch. No, not my wife needs a shidduch. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, sometimes the kids, my daughter needs a shidduch, and my wife needs panusa, and I need this, and the chavochet problems that machshuv azulis by adav. I don't know, the kind of problems that Mezirat Shemag was worried about. And the choyre, the direct way, would be say, okay, I'm the Rebbe, I know thoughts, let me give you the answer. The Aitzit, this is that, the Aitzit, that is that, the Aitzit, that is in the white, I'll give you a bracha, and so on. But that's not what he did, or at least according to this description, it's not what he did. And there were many other smart, wise teachers that never did that. I noticed it. Like, if someone asks you a question, you answer it, it's almost never useful.
Does it social worky thing. It's the fact that he's really bothered by it.
Even sometimes it's the correct answer, even, but it's not helping.
It's never.
Most of the time, right?
Yeah.
Most of the time, when someone asks you a question that doesn't want the answer, or maybe he does want the answer, but it's not helpful.
Right,
like,
usually
say
you already know the answer, and something else that doesn't want the answer.
Could also be, or it's just an excuse for asking a different question, really. Yeah, it's a whole thing. It just doesn't work, not useful for the most part. So this is a very interesting thing. I've had this experience with different teachers also, and I've realized that I thought that they were just like playing around with me, because I would notice someone that I would ask a question, and they would give me like some doichik that it's like, blah, 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 blah. And then for 3 weeks would give shirim about my question. He wouldn't say Yitzchak asked the question. But I noticed, wait, it was a better question than you let on. Turns out it bothered you, and you're looking for a teretz, and you found a whole mahalach, and another one, another one. And I hear, and then I could think, doesn't answer my question, does it not?
The Medrash talks about it. I really kind of say it was a bad answer, the next day you give it like a whole different answer to it.
I remember. Yeah, so then, so I thought, okay, maybe it doesn't pass him. They should have told me, good question, I don't know, let's think about it, maybe I'll find an answer for you, or maybe you'll... But... Another better way of looking at it, or maybe alternative, says, oh, maybe why don't I make a video for the people, not a video, what's it called? Not this. And my group, no, let me do it. An alternative way of doing it is, way of describing this is, so number one, there's the Lois said it's not useful to actually answer the questions. Number one, because of all these reasons that we've discussed, and maybe even more. And also, there is a way, like another sense, if he is a Rebbe, if he does know something, and knowing something is a very complicated thing to make sense of, because when you say the Rebbe, someone, why do I keep on talking about the Rebbe and the Talmidim? If the Rebbe knows something, then what does it mean that you know something, right? What does it mean? Someone, take the Chassidus Rebbe model is a good model to understand this, although it's true for more intellectual kind of Rebbes too, and other kinds. It's not usually something reducible to a sentence that's an answer to a question. Almost never. So in other words, what don't we know? What is the question that we don't know most of the time?
In what context?
In all of the contexts.
Why?
No, Rabbi Shlomo, you should know already the slogan that I have. That's my answer to this question. What is the question? The question.
What does it mean to be a human?
No, that's already a very specific way of answering the question. What is the question that leads to that?
The question. I'll come back in a month. I'll give you a share on it.
I want how to be a human? No, I know what he means, but that's already an answer in some sense. That's already saying we already have a good way of asking the question, which sort of leads us to an answer. But
so
the question that leads to that is...
What if is?
Not what is it. No, that's metaphysically. Nobody cares about metaphysics. Why don't I care? What is the first question?
How to live the good life?
You already said a too long question. Make it shorter.
How should we live?
How to live.
Very good. How to live. How to live in the sense of how I should live my life in the most simple sense. That is the question, right? Very good. Of course, this can be particularized in any way, how to live, how to have a good life. Right when you come and you say, I want to shiram pirim, you're just saying, how do I live as a yid who has a whole history and all kind of things that put me all the way down until we get to pirim. But it's just an instance of the question, how to live, right? That's if there's a question. Sometimes they just tell me a good word. You should laugh. Okay, so how do I laugh? If it's a serious question, then it's some kind of variation of the question, some kind of particularization, right? Some kind of prat in the question how to live. Can't be anything else, right? Or if you want to ask me what's the teretz on the Rambam's kasha on the Ravid or the opposite or whatever, it's how to live in a specific intellectual context, which already has all these assumptions and so on, right? Explain Masechtas Yevamos is another way of asking. Explain me how to live as a Yid who thinks that it's a thing to learn Masechtas Yevamos. How do you do that? That's why people go to yeshiva for, right? Not to have the like list summary of all the shidim, but then you could ask ChatGPT for that. Right? And even before that, you could look in Kitzur Pesach Harash. Right, so being a Rebbe or someone that knows something is not usually, this is important, it's not really reducible to, I have the answer, right? You think, you don't understand what is Zika. I'll tell you what is Zika. Shveir Ishaal, nobody knows. I know. He's a great Rebbe, he knows. The point is something else. The point is that he knows how to live with not knowing what is Zika and finding out, and he has a certain way in which he finds out, in which he works through things, and you know, certain sources that are important for him, whatever he's teaching in yeshiva, all of that. Right? Now, that is not actually teachable in the way of like answer my sentence. I have a question, a sentence that ends with a question mark. You'll give me a sentence that ends with an exclamation mark, and that will be the teaching. Lovet. Not all of it, because it's not relevant to the question that was asked. The question that was asked is a question of how to live in us, or even a specific way of how to live. So you have to know how to live. And in other words, a Rebbe or someone that you're asking the question of, you assume that he somewhat knows how to live. And what does that mean, that he knows how to live? It's something that is embodied in the way that he lives it, right? In other words, the answer to the question, what a Zika is, come to my shir on Zika. It's not the summary of the shir. That's not really the question. That's not the question you ask with our Talmud. That's a question that an encyclopedist, someone who's just making a summary of all the shittas, needs to know. And then he might as well use Ketzer Piskerosh. Just tell me the three shittas, Koivitz, Isoides, and Chakiris. You could become better than all the yeshivalat ever if you just read that book.
Which one?
Whatever. Forget about all the yeshiva stuff here. There's a guy that made a summary of all these Shir Shechakiris, a big fat book. Achikam Keshet, his name is. Very great book. If you want like a Hakira for anything, he has it. And he has it. Mar Mekomis, Rebbe Chana Basma says this, and Rebbe Chbez said that.
That's great.
And it's fine. And now you can argue, but that's not the point. Nobody ever thought that was the point. That's useful. I'm not saying it's not useful. But that was never the point.
It doesn't exist. That's great.
Right? Yeah, there's a thing. And then he has a few versions, and it's very good. It's very good. It's like an encyclopedia of Yeshivish raid on Kol HaTorah Kol, not raid, but like the summary of the summary of the raid. What's the nafkamina? What's the point? That the answer can only be come to the shir. It can't be, let me tell you this, the maskuna of the shir, because that's not what you were asking. And if you think that's what you were asking, that's a better way of saying why you will be disappointed if he actually answers you that way. Sometimes people do answer that way, but they don't really mean that. They just mean, get out of here. Get off my back. You don't want the real answer, come to the sheet. So this explains us why, and so therefore, if
you mean like how you got there,
how you live that kind of life—that's the question. How you live that kind of life, not how you got there. How you got there is why would I have to never go through the whole shver way if we would know the maskuna? No, it's how you live that kind of life. There is a kind of life that's called figuring out what Zika is. And you got to learn how to live that kind of life. If you're interested in it, maybe you shouldn't be interested in it. That's a different question. But the question that a yeshiva bachur asks from the yeshiva when he comes is, how do I live that kind of life? And the answer is, come to the shir. How many times do I have to come? I don't know, until you figure it out. Until you can do it yourself, basically. Right? But if he would tell him, just let me just answer you. I can give you the summary of the whole everything they teach you in yeshiva in 20 minutes. It might be very useful for other purposes, but not for the purpose that you came here. Yeah. And in the same way, if a Yid came to the Mezritcha Magid and he heard that he's a teacher, someone that knows something, what does he know? He knows how to live, for some value of knowing how to live, right? In a certain sense of knowing how to live. Right? More specifically, he knows how to... What does the Mezritcha Magid know that we don't know? Anyone know? He would go to him, what would you ask him? What?
Chassidus.
What is Chassidus?
Inspire people, get people to follow you. A lot of things you ask them.
Well, obviously, he knows how to get people to follow him, but that's not like what they're... Hopefully, that's not the main thing they're going to learn.
That's what I was doing.
What does Mezritcha Magid know that we don't know?
Chassidus probably a lot better than I do.
Well, he invented Chassidus, right. Of course he knows it, but that's like, why would anyone care about Chassidus? He just invented it yesterday. There must be a question that it answers, right?
Some sort of deeper meaning of what the Torah is coming to do, I guess.
Okay.
If you were looking for the answer.
Yeah,
if I would answer this question on the spot, it would destroy the whole point of this year.
No, I think it's a good question. What do you think he knows that we don't know? What kind of things does he know that we don't know?
Only how to live.
Those, how to live, but like, give me
only how to live.
A certain sense, but in a certain sense of how to live, right? The Avinu also knows how to live, but not the same one that the Mezir Shemagid knows. Right? So what does he know?
You should be the only one who doesn't answer this question, just so.
So many things going on up here. Like, we know so many
I
know
nothing
things.
About him. I know what I read from.
At least I should bump
so,
it.
That's about it, right? That's, all,
you
know. That's basically the thing. It's like, oh, wait, that's who he was talking about, basically.
I could, whatever I would say, you'd say the villain also wants to decide. I don't even know if it's true that comeback. But let's say to live, how to live happy, how to be happy.
Okay. Something. I think that he knew how to live. I'm going to say words that are not going to be very meaningful. Yeah, I think he knew how to live in the presence of something very subtle without making it into a system or a box. In other words, he knew how to say a Torah on Shabbos by the Tish that would have something to do with your wife's issues, or she asks you for money, and the problems you have with being mechavim by Shemoneh Esrei, which is exactly what I described before. That's what I think. Maybe he wasn't. It's just my imagination. I think that he knew something about that. What I think. So, and someone comes to him and he asks him basically this question. He asks him a lot of questions, but why did you come to me, right? You asked me how to have panusa, I don't know, go to your local Yoyetz Lenyune Parnusa, whatever it is.
Balatanya
said. Right. As the Balatanya said, but of course Balatanya himself. Okay, whatever, let's not get stuck in this. Point is. The point is. Whatever, he's trying to systemize things and it's not working. Yeah. The point is, he knows something about that. And therefore, the answer cannot be, you know, like, I have a slogan. Say, tikkun akilut li'ikvayos nishom, okay, whatever. There are ways of having slogans that answer these kinds of problems, but that's like a whole art. But what he really says is, okay, no problem, so I'll tell you exactly what I'll do. I have a way of, like, going into some kind of, having my state of Shabbos saying Torah. And in that kind of state, I know how to relate to all the kind of questions that you asked. And that activity, that action, will respond to your problems. And it will do a much better job than if I will just list out my answers. Because I'm sure I'm a smart guy, I can list out the answers to all the problems that you gave me. But that's not what you came to me for. You think that I, the Mezir Shemagid, me, has some kind of way of doing things, right? I have a way of doing things, so let me exactly do it. Let me do it with you. You'll see how I'm doing it. Maybe you'll be able to somehow get something from it, or maybe you'll be able to imitate it. Maybe you'll be able to at least get something out of it. And it turns out that he probably said much. You know that when giving or advice or not advice in the broader sense, right? Teaching is also a kind of giving advice for the mind, right? You know how it's said and what is not said, and from which angle you start is just as important as the content, like the purely intellectual sentence, right? And probably because he does it in this kind of way, it turns out to be a lot more useful, even in the simple sense of being advice, than if he would just like be answering everyone's questions. Makes sense?
Yeah.
Sure, so that was the Akdama about the Mezir Shemagid. So now we understand how we have to do things. What? We spoke about this already? Huh.
How's it that's the perm?
What? How?
How's it that's the perm? Achashverosh didn't know what he was looking for?
Ah, so now we could start, we could think about a bunch of things. What should we think about?
So continuation of the last Yishe Shapiro?
I don't know what was last Yishe
Shapiro. Oh, no, Sonic. I thought you asked.
Tell me. Yeah, you didn't tell me what it was.
Yeah, so I think it was last year. It was 2 years ago. I think last year's Shir was that in summary, if you don't fast on Pesach when it's need to, when you need to be fasting, that's not called like stavai yedid.
What does that mean?
In other words, like Motche and Esther decide to fast on Pesach, but we have
right.
this thing like
oh, okay, what's
thousands
it got to
of
do?
People are dying, whatever. It's okay, kept the mitzvahs. Like, hello, yeah. wake up!
Okay.
Like God is like writing the world for you, the same way He wrote the Torah for you. That's
yeah.
something that I think you said that last year.
Okay.
No, just
yeah, yeah. I hear. And therefore, how is it connected to this?
No, it's not. I thought maybe you want to continue from last year.
No, I don't want to continue.
Oh,
from last
you asked
year.
A question. If
but there was probably a reason why I said that last year, and I don't know.
This is October 7th and everything, whatever.
There's still.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a different discussion. Okay, so let's get back to where we are. So let's say something about Pidim. The important thing about Pidim and all of these kind of platforms, like Shabbos, Yom Tov, Pidim, anything, is that we have to come to them with certain questions, or figure out what the questions are, maybe by them, by doing them, figure out what the questions are. And these questions are not Pidim questions, right? It's not the pshat that there are some Pidim kashas, like on Chanukah we're very worried about the Bais Yosef's kasha for some reason, and on Pidim we're very worried about some other kasha, I don't know what it is.
Who Achashverosh?
Who was Achashverosh?
Are you Achashverosh? Who? Achashverosh, that's the kasha.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
Or I don't know, whatever people are worried about on Pidim. And every
the Bachim always worry about do you drink, how much do you either drink, you know, you can do that Ramah.
Okay, whatever it is. And that and then Motzah Pidim, it's where not the guys. It's Kuryotzing then, it's moved it's finished. Right? And we sort of think that there must be it must be at least some kind of platform too that allows us to answer all the kinds of questions, right? Makes sense.
Tafkan Pidim?
The Rebbetzin, Agnes Kallet, says that she calls these kind of questions that have no time. There's never the good time to ask them. Why? Because when is the good time to ask a question? Well, when?
When the problem arises.
And the problem arises is a good time to ask a question?
That's when you have the question.
Okay, and usually it's too late to ask the question, right? Like, what kind of question do you mean? The question, by the way, this is right, the question of how many bottles of wine you have to drink on Pidim is probably not best asked on Pidim afternoon. Why? Because you should have already bought the bottles of wine yesterday in the store, man. It's like too late now, right? So when you actually need to use an answer, by the time you need the answer, that is not a good time to ask a question. Right?
Why?
Because you already need it.
So that sounds like a waste time to ask a question, because now you need the answer.
Very good. It's and sounds like it would be the best time, but it's actually the worst time to figure out the answer. Because if I needed the answer yesterday.
If I knew it before, but I didn't know there would be a question. I'll be learning fast answers.
No
problem. Question might not come
but,
up in life.
So if the moment you need it,
so memorizing a phone book.
You actually need it now, if you actually need the answer now,
yeah.
then asking it's not a good time to ask a question.
I'm not getting the logic. If I let's ask a question. If I want to know a phone number, the question is, what is the phone number, right? Because I need to live my life to get this phone number.
So you don't need it right now. You need it tomorrow. You need it in 5 minutes. You have enough time to find out the answer, right?
Right, but I was memorizing the phone number 5 minutes ago. But
pretty simple. So it's a pretty simple question.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes only about a minute or however long it is to figure
yeah.
it out. And then you need it before you use it. But you just think you have enough time. All right, very good. What if we have a question that is probably not going to take only 5 minutes to figure out? It's going to take 5 hours to figure out.
Okay, then if I wouldn't be the good decide, probably should have known 5 hours.
What? You not only should have known 5 hours, right? Not only should have you known 5 hours before, well, what if, how could you have, but there's a problem, like there's a paradox here, right? How could you have known? I don't know, maybe it just happened now, suddenly it's Pidim, what do we do? Turns out it's not suddenly Pidim, because we already know it for thousands of years, but let's say some, there's other issues in life that are like this, right? Suddenly it's like this. Now what do you do, right? Usually there's some other guy that pretends he knows. But what happens? So, but no, it's important, right? But this is important, right? The emergency. There's like people that the Hatzilah guy. His job is to know things before when you really need it to know it, but you didn't prepare yourself, right? That's his base. The definition of emergency services, right? Emergency services are people whose job is to know things in the right time because other people didn't take the time to learn it before. Or they couldn't. I'm not saying they have to. There's a division of labor. That's his job. His job, right? But the point that she makes is that there's a basic problem, which is that once we need something,
yeah,
and it's something that we really need, right? Just to be clear, the phone number is not something you really need. Or maybe you really need it, but your life is not going to change. And if it was the wrong number, you'll try again. You'll figure it out.
Phone that cell up.
It's a small... Yeah, you have to find that cell's number. Upside there, but maybe... it's a small problem. If as the bigger the problem is,
yeah,
and the more acute it is, you need it right now, the worse time it is to ask the question.
But you do the answer before.
Assuming that both the question is important, and that it's needed now, and that it's not a question with a simple answer, with like just a piece of information, like a phone number,
right,
which at the end of the day is just a very, it's only 7 bits of information, pretty easy.
9.
Depends on how long the phone number is, yeah. Depending. So whatever it is, it's pretty easy to find out what the phone number is. It's a pretty simple answer, right? There isn't usually any like yigiyas atoyre going into finding out the answer. It doesn't even make sense for there to be any kind of yigiyas, like work to finding out the answer, right? What about the question of how to live? When is a good time to ask it?
You know what? Now we know the tailors.
Now I understand. Tzaddik. Because once you're here, it's like you gotta already be a tzaddik, right?
Uh-huh. Now,
when we can have time?
In the what's it called? In the womb.
100%.
That's a shot.
That's a good shot.
You gotta know it before.
But there's a real issue here. Right? Assuming that there's something to be questioned, and it's irrelevant, it's something we need to have known already tomorrow, already yesterday, and therefore, this is the nice Oscar, right? I don't want to steal like colored things of giving YouTube clips about this problem. So we have to say it only in Chassidish language. The B'nai Sosker is the one that noticed this problem, right? You know. Rebbe Shmailich from Minkach, wherever, where did he live? Not in Minkach, in...
Dinev.
From Dinev. His uncle lived in Minkach, I'm confused. And the B'nai Shmailich, Dinev, had a big issue. As he said, that the Rishonim, the Rambam, and the Tzaddikim said that a person should be choyker if there's a God. Literally, like if you open the Chovos Halvos, and it's amazing, like Chassidus Yidin, like really get a shock from this. You open the Chovos Halvos, and this is a book of the duties of the heart, right? Wow, it's an our thing, right? Litvaks are only about what your outer Evurim have to do, and this is all about what your internal state should be, what your internal intention should be, and all of that. And it gives you this whole long Drushim Bagdoma that you need. That's what we need, that's the most important thing, and that's the only way to get close to God, all kinds of things. And then he starts and says, Pairik Aleph, okay, so first thing you got to know in your heart is that there is a God, right? But let's find out, is there one or isn't there one? Because that's the basic process of reasoning, of learning, right? First we say, is there and isn't there? And then if there is...
First, what is a God?
This is based on Aristotle's list of questions.
He doesn't see what is God.
Yeah, no, he starts I know that is a problem. We're not talking about this problem. This is based on Aristotle's list of questions, the topics. It doesn't matter. It goes like, usually when we ask about something, we have to know if it exists, and after we know that it exists, we can ask what it is. Okay, and now it's a problem. In any case, we're going to start by this question about God. Is there a God? Then we'll ask what kind of God there is, or what is it? And that's a problem because we can't ask it because nobody knows. Besides, we get into issues. It's a complicated philosophical problem. If we could, and how these kind of questions work in Israel. But the point is that the first last sentence it tells you is we got to do it in the normal philosophical, logical order. So question number one, is there a God? You come to the Sheikh Sidis, and they say, so the first question is, there's two Sudim. One side is Yesh Elohim. The other side is Ein Elohim. Let's find out. This is Chovos Halvavos. Every Chassidishi that read it, ripped up this page, literally. Meshige. We're here to worship God. Chovos Halvavos. Wait, is there a God? The first thing you got to know. Right? And maybe there isn't. But this maybe there isn't. It's really nerve-wracking. Like, maybe there isn't. Right?
Or they don't translate Ibn Tibbin's translation.
Yeah, yeah. No, but this is what it means. Yeah. That's just a very nice illustration of the problem. Right? Maybe there isn't. Well, that's maybe, but there isn't.
They have the same question on the Rebbe.
That, well, maybe there isn't the Rebbe.
Yeah.
Maybe there isn't the Rebbe.
Rebbe's right there again.
Saying that's the same
process. Well, he obviously exists.
That's the same thought process, so you understand where they're coming from.
Understand where who's coming from. No, I want to explain better what their problem is. So said the Bnei Sascha, who tried to give words to this problem. He said like this. Yesh baya. A minute like, right, if you believe in God, then you have some kind of relation with Him. Some kind. And if you don't believe in God, then you have no relation to Him. In some basic sense, right? So you're telling me, Mr. Bachya, that the first step in getting close to God is to get as far from Him as possible. We should entertain the thought that there is no God. Because there's no other way of doing research without entertaining that thought, right? You're just fooling yourself. This is obvious. I'm glad my Sasko doesn't not worry about this. I don't know. Because he's starting from, he just already knows. How do you know? But he just already knows. In any case, and he's like, how could this be? How are we allowed to do this? Doesn't make sense. Maybe if you're a very big tzaddik, chvaiznish mas. Kitzah, you're not allowed to. It's a das tevera. It's mamish. Rabriski could say it like this, right? It's you're a koifer for that second, right? They literally have this thing, right? Mm. And being a koifer for 1 second, this chayav misa. It's not actually true. Chayav misa for being a koifer, by the way. That's just a made up halach. Doesn't even say in the Rambam. They misread the Rambam. But that's not our shmis. In any case, let's say some it is. But that's also says it better. You're cutting yourself off from the God. That's true. And even for that 1 second, even if it's just to learn the shtik the shirach of the hovus, right? Im ayin. So how are you allowed to do that?
Again, assuming that you're better off.
And somehow we'll... So, okay, I mean, we're not here to argue with his logic. We're here to know what is the... let's be clear. We're here to make progress. Everyone here knows how to laugh at the Bnei Sasko. That's not interesting. We're here to do something else. To explain, based on Agnes Callard, the Bnei Sasko. Okay? And...
this is great.
And why are we doing that? Because... You notice that he's noticing a much broader, of course, a much broader, deeper, and more problematic thing than this, like, funny ways of saying. So it's a chash is, do it's a veil lishma, you have to is in order to have a muna, you have to not. We get into all these, like, funny discussions. But what he's really showing you is something much more basic, right? You'll remember this is, but this is all based also on William James' article, Will to Believe, who her book is sort of based on also. In any case, you should read it. William James. It's going to be in our list of reading somewhere. It has an article called The Will to Believe. That's what it's called.
He's
very important article, and he describes this. The important thing he talks about is how there are certain questions where you're not free to not choose. Right. So this is the problem that we're talking about. In order to question,
not choosing is a choice. I think he phrases
that.
Yeah.
It's maybe you're free, but there's a price to that also, and you need to already know now. You can't say I don't have the time. This is what the Messiah is saying, right? You have to understand the question to him, of course, what does it mean exactly? There's a God, all these things. Well, different thing. But to him, the question or the existence of a God is something acute. He cannot really live. It's already an answer to a question, right? He cannot really live without knowing that answer. Right? William James' example is like the person that never gets married, because that's a decision that has to be made under conditions of doubt. And since he's following the atheist command from, he quoted from someone that said, never assent to something you don't know for sure. That's the basic command of a certain version of rationalism. Therefore, you never know that who's she's going to be the right wife. You never get married. Turns out that that's itself a certain decision to never get married. And you don't know that for sure either. So you're stuck. But in any case, it's like refusal to commit, or refusal to decide, or refusal to know anything, is something that that shows us that some things need to already be known. I need to already know the answer, right? And for Rabbi Yishmaelich, obviously, since he's a Jew and since his life doesn't make any sense, to realize his life doesn't make any sense without a God. You could even like formalize this into some kind of argument, but to him, he's not doing that.
I'm sorry, sir, but there's someone that argued on that and that said that. It's a 50-50, right?
Pascal's wager.
Yeah, that's who it was, right? That if you...
I think he also touched on this idea. I was thinking about it the whole time.
Yeah, but wait. We're just talking about a different idea. Let's try to get at it. Uh-huh. Maybe we'll be able to get at it. We're getting at something like this. This question... He's just using this as an example. Really, the question of a God... It's not really the most primary question, I think. I mean, or only the primary question at the end. It's complicated. But in any case, for him, just to be clear, and for most people who are educated in that kind of, in a religious system of thought, any of them. The life doesn't make sense without a God existing, which means that if there is no God, I can't do anything. I cannot do anything. No, not meaning. I don't know what this word meaning is. Means I can't do anything because humans act on the basis on a certain of a certain sense on how things make sense, how the world connects to each other, some kind of science, some kind of logic, some kind of causality. And at the linchpin of his understanding of how this is, although he might probably doesn't know how to explain it, is that there is a God, which means that everything he does now is based on that, right? The silly way I describe it usually is if someone comes to me and asks me a question, the tzaddik called me up and says, could you tell me if there's a God, did he give the Torah? Al tzaddik gave the Torah. Did it was the chassidish Torah, the literature Torah? Al tzaddik was the chassidish Torah, was the visions of Aleph or the visions of Ba'ez, Bekitze. And I always tell him, okay, could you tell me why you need an answer for this? Are you running to Mencha? You need to know already if she's out of Mencha. And my point is always, and therefore that's probably not a good way to ask the question. Because you need a lot more freedom for that. How are you going to... You're just go down mincha. I don't know. Figure out a different way to reason down mincha. I don't know. Like it's not. But the other side of this is showing the problem. Since he has to down mincha, not he has to down mincha because Hashem told him down mincha. That's illogical. He has down mincha in the sense that he has to do something. He has a sadriyam. A person is he is already living, right? When you ask the question of how to live, it's a very weird question to ask because you're already living and you're asking the question with the living that you're already living
in.
Yeah. So it doesn't really make sense. You're really stuck. It's really very hard. Mrs. Kalich thinks there's no solution to this problem besides for having friends, which is a good stims with Maya Mahala. That's what she thinks. But in any case, because then you have the other person to represent the other side. That's what she claims Socrates Chiddush was. It's a shtickle toy. I don't know if it's entirely convincing, but that's a shtickle toy. My point is that this just shows you the problem. Since I'm already davening mencha, so this is definitely not a way that it's possible. It's a paradox. I need to know that there's a God in order to daven mincha, but I also need to daven mincha or do something else. Anything else, I also need to know the answer to the question, right?
Yeah.
Even if I decide that there's not a God and I don't daven mincha, I also need to know the answer. So when is going to be the time that I have the Chazon Ish's ideal state case for becoming a minna, right? Remember the Chazon Ish's beginning of a minna betochen? No? Put it on my list. He has a list of the reading things that you have to know to come to my sheikh.
No, I thought you said that the Chazon Ish had to become a min.
How to have a minna. In Yiddish. A minna. A minna. Right? Remember how the Chazon Ish started his book. No, that's a minna. An amina. Anyways, the Chazon Ish started his book, Ted. How does it start?
Look it up.
It starts like this: Midas Hamuna, he netiya daka miadinut hanefesh, and then it goes like this: Im. It's very important to Im. Im ha'odom ibal nefesh, v'shat v'shat ha'sheket, and then it goes on to say things. And now this Im is the Im, yeah. Im mizera yidin deigroisn Im. The Im from the Chazon Ish. On this Im start ganz Yiddishkeit, or the fact that it doesn't exist is why it starts. Not just the. What he's saying is that the condition for having a minna in any kind of real free way, right? Not just, I'm stuck, so I'm just continuing the situation because there's nowhere to stop it, is if he gives you two conditions. One is that you're something he calls a baal nefesh. Okay, since he's doing poetry, he means something like a sensitive soul. He's not really doing philosophy there. Which is true, you need some sensitivity also to be a philosopher. Like Aristotle said, where does philosophy start? In?
The heart.
Wonder. Says in the beginning of the metaphysics.
I've never actually read that. Is it outside?
I didn't either. I just know you should know at the beginning. It's like one of the slogans. I've read some of it. But it's a very famous quote. Heschel made a big deal out of it. Wonder meaning what? How? Like, wow, things are happening. What's going on? Like, right? It doesn't mean wonder in like all sense necessarily. Just like the question, like a pre-formalized question is wonder. Right?
I
wonder. You could call it curiosity. Anyways, right? So, you have to have that. And what else do you need to have? Shas HaSheket. You need to have a time of silence.
Solitude.
You have to do a silent retreat. No, you don't have to do a silent retreat. What it means is, you have to have the mental space or the emotional space or the physical space also, obviously, right? Basically, what? And then you'll start wondering about the world, and according to him, you'll find out it's Valabira or whatever. But before that, nothing starts.
Look, we have phones, you don't have to worry about that.
We have phones which are making sure that we never have any of that. So we don't have any Svaikas Namina, unlike what the Chassidish even think that phones are going to Svaikas Namina. It's Haib Tachshtum. Phones make people never have any Svaikas in anything.
It's actually true.
Because having a Sufik means you have a lot of extra time. Not a lot. Not extra, by the way, no.
Time
that's
to
not
think.
A,
you have
a,
to have time to think.
Have, right. And time is also space, like okay. in emotional space, like a whole, like basically you have to have space.
Your brain isn't. Your phone is thinking, your brain isn't.
And that's the opposite. So, and actually, they're right that you shouldn't have a phone because you can't be an apikoidus with a phone. And or you can't be an imam without being an apikoidus first. So, therefore, right? Because that's the question now. They're saying the Chazal was said. So, therefore, the Chassidish Yidden are right, but only with Chassidish
and apathy. When it was before the phone, it's called Chazal Kaifrim. The second went the phones, it's over. Exactly. Because you don't need it, it's on you all the time. There's no like thing down. It was a chalois. It's like the medical computer.
There's no chalois.
You thought it was a different thing.
That's true. Only the Eden that he keep Shabbos and don't use their phones or computers on Shabbos, they have a shtickle chalos. Yeah. Mitzvah Hashem, when I'll make new Yiddish guide as we like in Bayef Duda, we're going to add a model by screens le paper or something.
I tell you something, the biggest rush is the guy finds I have to use electricity on Shabbos. It's just a rush.
Electricity doesn't bother me. Shabbos, I forgot exactly. Okay, let's say it right. Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
The internet is not conductive. Not conductive to thought. But this is important, right? This condition of having anything, of any knowledge, is having the question. And the condition is to have some kind of space for asking that question. And just to be clear, if you're worried, if you're very vadagit with the even kama bakoiris, that's definitely not space to ask the question, right? And if you're worried that you should be an apikoiris, or if you're worried that your father taught you lies, that's also not a good space to ask the question. So it turns out that since the times of Udumarishan, there wasn't anyone that had time to ask this question. Right? Or in a pure way. Right? Because we're all very, very much far from being happy or being free. Right? Bal nefesh, some of us are, but shati shas hasheket, that's a very difficult condition. Difficult in the sense of being almost metaphysically impossible, right? Because it's a logical loop. In order to care about it, you have to already need it, and if you already need it, then you don't have space to think about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is why the best way to have Duha Kira is to already have Emunah.
Because you already have the conclusions.
No, nah, not because you already have the conclusions. That's just dumb. That's like the arrow in the putting the turning the target around the arrow, right? No, the reason for that is. No, could you imagine what I'm saying? By the way, this is true. I've noticed some people who like, if you're very religious, and you're not worried about becoming a kohen, very important. You also have to not be worried about becoming a kohen.
Yeah.
Not have the silchas kfira that year. Maybe for 1 second you become a kohen. Maybe no, 5 minutes was the shi'a minimum kfira. No, you should not be worried about that. Why not? Because no, I have a minna. And therefore, some people have formalized it like this. Like you have. There's two kinds of emunah. Even the Rambam almost lives in this formalization. There's something called believing what you were told, and we believe what we're told. Sean, the guy saying, "I'm a chassid." Who said? I'm fine. Nothing wrong with being a chassid. Everything they say that you do, I do also.
Rav Shagar calls it emunah batiyat.
Plus,
at home emunah.
Right. Besides for that, now we're gonna think. But now we're thinking without worrying that we become other chassid. Who said? We're not becoming us. How do we become us? So now we have real freedom because even God Himself lets us think. Perhaps. Not only that, has told us that it's a mitzvah. So we're very happy. We're doing mitzvah b'semach. Not mitzvahs and not avayis. Nothing works b'atzvahs.
But why is it more ideal than, I don't know, some secular person?
Because secular people are also living within an answer. The secular person has no God to tell him that it's okay to question everything. But just to be clear, I've already told you this many times, but this is just my like hacks. It's not really helpful. I'm just saying it so you should get out of different thoughts. But in reality, some so-called religious people have a lot more freedom of thought than most secular people. Now, I'm sure there's everywhere people that have managed to break free. But for some kind of generalization, if it's useful in any case, you can see that. I told you the Masa with Uri Holtzman, right?
Yeah, I haven't read it.
What's the Masa? I told you. So Rabbi Holtzman, he told me that he's like this he really thinks he's open-minded, whatever. But in any case, and he's like, I'm just thinking, I have my conclusions, but I think I have no problem. So he met this secular guy, and they told him, you know, there's a little problem, the Haredi and the secular, they're in a fight. Why don't we sit down and handle things out and stuff? And he said, sure, let's make a... So he told him, okay, but this person told him, like, he's thought he's like so firm, so he must be very hard to talk to, so, you know, like, what are the limitations? No limitations, we'll talk, whatever makes sense, whatever you think, we'll say. And then the guy got very scared. He's like, well, no, we can't do that. There have to be certain limitations, like everyone has to believe in liberalism and democracy. You can't just question everything, right? That's a good story. I don't know if it actually happened or how it happened, but I must have changed it. By saying it so many times, I must have changed it already. But it's true. Most people have more... The point is that there's a question of how to live. The question is not a specific answer. Oh, is the Mishnah B'rinah the way or the Rech HaShlach on the way?
It's funny because it's when I started reading everything. And the Shafik goes, everything was true. So I read everything. I read absolutely everything. When I had the first Shaila, then boom, you couldn't read anything because it starts getting like shaking you up. All right, it's funny. But
yeah. In any case, the point is that we need this kind. It's not. I don't know if this is a real solution. I'm just using this to show the real problem. If you're already, it might be a solution. I don't know. Maybe it's a solution. Is it a solution? Does it work?
I'm just wondering. That's why I asked it a second ago. Is the point of the solution is that you're kind of doing both because you already have.
So let's try to think. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't know if this is a solution. We understand the problem. The problem is a very serious problem. That the things that we really need to know the answer to, we really need to know the answer. And not only are we ready to know the answer, we're already acting from within a certain answer, right? And we're even asking the question based on a certain answer, right? This is why really questioning is almost like really suicide. Right, someone said once that the only real philosophical question is should you commit suicide? And he's right in his opinion. Like Albert Camus. Because who said he should even live? Like, you always know so many assumptions. Isn't that the first assumption? Everyone is already acting within a bunch, so many... assumptions, and the more important questions, the more they're based on these knowledge they already have. So how do we get out of this? We liberate them. Like the people, right? We all think of ourselves as great questioners, but the real great questioners are not people we want to associate with at all, right? Who?
Conspiracy theorists.
No, they have a lot of answers. I mean, some kind of if you really have enough questions, you end up in some kind of
nihilist life.
Not nihilist shit. This is Kostrikan Geld.
No,
some kind of nihilist life, right?
Drug addicts.
Yeah, maybe a drug addict, or maybe the opposite. I don't even know. It's hard to say. If you have no answer, then there's also all kind of things that happen to people that have no answers, just for kind of psychological and social and. Yes, and whatever reasons, but that's like the real kind of questioning that you should be doing, right? Being the guy that stands in the back of the sheet and laughs is not the greatest of pakoiris. Man, it's not a greatest questioner, right? Because he's more or less side himself, and that guy's. It's not what we're after, right? And you really can't. You can't. It's not even coherent. It's not even possible to really do that, right? People, let's try everything. Let's just see what happens. I don't know. Don't have no opinions whatsoever, and just see what happens. I don't know. See, you probably end up dead, and who knows who says that's bad? Can't even condemn you, right?
Socrates held that it's not bad.
Socrates did, yeah, but
I think be able to do it.
Yeah, more complicated. Those.
The way we know the brain works doesn't make any sense. Person will be able to do that. The motions.
Possible.
The logic.
Maybe yes, and maybe not. I think that's another ideology, but. You don't really know that. Just someone told you the theory.
Mind. That's
why. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just... whatever, let's not get stuck on this. Point is, it's very difficult. And it's difficult for a good reason. Meaning it's like incoherent almost. Right? And if something is... So you like William James says, I don't know. I don't know all these titles. Like we say, if the question is irrelevant, then you shouldn't. Why do you even care? Well, maybe it's interesting. How many legs does some animal in the Sahara Desert have? Okay, I don't know. They might be able to find that out with a free mind. Pertaining to that question, of course, the moment it becomes your job, or the moment you start doing it, you're not free anymore, right? Because now you're invested in there being a specific answer, at least in the question being important enough that the government should fund you, whatever.
You might have to make a study called History Cannabis, you know, whatever you make the...
You get into a problem, right? Once you start doing anything, you're committed to you're committed not only to an action, to a certain opinion, right? The most loosely held, you're still holding it, not only holding it, you're acting on it, right? So maybe... So the point is, the more important something is, the less possible it is to question it. And the more important it is to question it, for like basic reasons, because you want to know it, right? And otherwise, you're stamanav, you're just buying whatever the first thing was, and you took it, and it's also a question.
So what do you mean by less possible?
It's less possible, because you're already using it. It's more also psychologically and socially and emotionally and all kinds of problems. And also just like logically almost incoherent, right? Almost. I'm not saying entirely. There might be... There seems to be like a more basic problem than just that some hard emotionally to question the things you were brought up on. That's a small problem. We could solve that with some drugs or something. Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I know people have done that. I'm not saying it works so well. But there's a logical problem, which is that you're acting on the basis of an answer, right? If you think of a person, right, the person is not a physical being, right? A person is a philosophical being. In the sense of, also, by the way, nothing else is either. Right? In the sense of there's a certain organization of thoughts that you live with, that your life is, right? They're not only like beliefs, they're embodied beliefs, right? They have corresponding actions and emotions and physical things in your brain or wherever, I don't know. They're it's organized in a certain way. And questioning just means breaking it apart, right? It's like, and you're questioning it with the things that are already built up. Seems to be very hard. And where's this whole idea of free inquiry and knowledge, and which can only start with free inquiry, where is it can even be possible? And even if it is possible, the moment I start thinking about it, I already... by the way, what you asked me about people is true for thoughts also, right? We discussed this a few weeks ago. Right? The first time I have a thought, I either like it or hate it. Most people, most thought things, the way our, this is like a certain level of life or a certain level of soul, if we, most things that we bump into, or most even most thought we have, cause us either pleasure or pain. Right? And we like pleasure and don't like pain, usually. Or that's like the definition of pleasure. If you like it, that's pain. You might as well just change the words. And therefore, it's not only a, like, I like it, it's like saying yes, right? Saying pleasure is also an answer to a question. It's saying yes, saying I want that, so that is good, right? Mm-hmm. And if I have a thought on the first, even if I would start with some kind of freedom, the first thought I'll have, I'll either like or hate, and that like or hate, which is not necessarily rational, not necessarily true, but it's a thing that will lead me in that direction, right? So I'm already stuck. I'm already not very, very philosophical, not very rational.
Is your point that the question is, you're asking this question that people...
And on the other hand, without love, nobody learned anything without loving the subject, right?
Mm-hmm. Very
weird. Right. Never, because he has pleasure in that, so it's just called pleasure, right? A kind of pleasure, an abstract sense of pleasure, whatever it is, right? Of course, makes sense. So, what are we going to do? That is got to think and pee. That's going to be the head. It's shine. I don't know. Somehow,
is your question that you're trying to ask a better question than the boring biased question people ask? Oh, you're biased. You're not biased. You have an answer ready.
Mm-hmm.
So your question doesn't work because you have an answer.
That's like another way of saying.
Nothing you can't. Biased towards
why would I question it if I already have an answer and I think I know it? Not only I know it in an embodied way. I know it in the sense I'm living it. I'm living on the base, like. In the sense of, like, if you think of it, like, give you a musha, like, the foundation of my house is the answer to a certain question, which is, like, where should we put the house? What should we build it off? And now we're sitting on top of it, and, like, we're questioning it. Very cute, you're questioning it, but, like, it doesn't even make any sense. Right?
This is postmodernism 101.
I don't know what I told you. I don't know what those words mean.
It's nice to have a title to describe questions other people had. I feel like
might be, but whatever. A kitzit, it's a baya. I think it's a baya. This is just a question. There's an answer to the question also. Postmodernism is what you call postmodernism is called Yish in the Nachman. Because since I had a good question and I liked the question so much, therefore it must be that nobody ever thought of this question before me. And there's thousands of years of thought and of everything that obviously started off with this question, but they didn't notice it. And we're the first generation to realize it, and therefore everything is nonsense. Therefore, we should just hang out and eat rice. We shouldn't eat pizza because pizza is not healthy. We should eat rice.
Rice, that's
it. Eating acid, actually. But yeah, it's more like that.
And join. But that's just, firstly, that's also already an answer, and it's also very stumped, like, mostly because it's Yish. I'm just against it because of the Yish. I'm not saying that I have got a better answer. I'm saying that it's just like, the first question you had, you just decided that it's the last question ever anyone could ever have. Mm. No, it's not. Why are you so sure?
It's
every inquiry and every science in the world started with some good questions, and we made progress by moving somehow through those questions. That's how life has been working for life and everything. So why would basic questions be different? They're not different. You just have to do that.
Made
work.
A lot of slower progress on that.
Is that a basis of atheism in some sort of way also?
I don't know, but again, like, I'm just answering this question.
Way?
Yeah, atheism is also a min
is
Yish. Also a min is based on Yish. Anything that's not philosophy is based on Yish.
If you want that, look into it.
Not Lomdis. Okay? Everything else is based on Yish. Right? Shechnurich is based on Yish. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do if somebody shit is not real? Let's just ask it. What are we going to do? We're going to learn it. What's the big problem? Ah, too long? Okay, we'll learn a little. It's just based on Yish, and we jump into conclusions, right? The Yosef Karo says this on his Akdome. Just based on Yish. Shechnurich is based on Yish. What are we going to do? There's so many shit. Nobody could learn anything.
The Rambam was after. The Rambam was like, it's a waste of time. So here's a quick...
Yeah, okay, it's different, different kind of...
How do you Yalish B'miyash on that, basically?
Maybe he's... I'm not saying that all Yish are unjustified. Like you said, maybe he's correct. Maybe it's needed. Because Bizdeval, we need something to do. I'm just saying.
It's the light of Bizdeval Yosef now. Why not the Rambam?
Because the Rambam doesn't describe this problem. It has a different problem, like you said. The Rambam never said... No, okay. We're getting off the subject. Let's not do that. What we're trying to say is that I think that there are. Now, how do I know that there's a solution to this problem?
You found
it. How do. No, that would be dumb to say. How would. Why would we. Why would. You have to remember, nobody asks questions that are. To ask a question is to believe, right? Now, this is another way in which skepticism is based on belief in a certain sense. Right? Because to ask a question, a good question, not skepticism, I mean, I'm stopping to ask questions, I just decide. But to ask a question is based on the belief or the hope that there's a way through it. Right? That's the meaning of a question. The meaning of a question is, like I said, it's an opening of a door, not a closing of a door, right? Just like everything else in the world is organized towards its goal, right? The meaning of the week is that there's Shabbos, it ends there, and so on. The meaning of a question is that it's leading you, it's pointing towards an answer. And that's why we say the better the questions are, good questions is half of an answer, or maybe a really good question is the whole answer. Because it's like becomes very obvious. Our problem is usually that our questions are not very good. Our questions are very fuzzy and very broad, and very like, what do I do? I don't know, what kind of question is that? What do I do? If you have a very specific question, they might become answerable, right? And the process of learning is process of refining the questions until they become answerable, or until their answer becomes almost obvious. But the point is that questioning, and we know that this works, because we've seen how many people doing it. Just like we say in everything. We know everything because we watch people doing it. And we've watched people start off with these kind with. Even with this like meta question of how could we question things and figure out something, and even if it might be hard to describe, maybe it would be harder, easier to watch than to describe, or easier to do than to describe. Sometimes some descriptions of things happen after doing them, not before doing them, but we know that there is a way out of this. We're not trying to get ourselves stuck, and all kinds of solutions that say therefore we should just jump into the lake or whatever, that those are just not they're not really asking the question. That's another way of saying it, right? Because to ask a question is something that comes with an answer. Or at least could be answered and should be answered, right? The questions that shouldn't be answered are the ones that are already an answer, right? Yeah, the reason there's such questions is because they're not good questions, of course. They're really answers that just said in the language of a question. But if there are good questions, then there's answers. Or maybe because you're not ready, which is another way of saying you're not asking the correct question. You're asking the question wrongly. The way you're asking it can't be answered. You would know how to ask the question, you would know the answer to. Makes sense.
Actually,
you could leave. It's a good question, man.
If I'm left with a cliffhanger over here.
Oh, maybe. Don't worry, I don't have an answer to the problem.
If you ever find the answer, let me know.
He's making a podcast, so you'll find out.
It better not be for you, too.
Thank you. Guys. Stem, so, what are we going to do? Oh, firstly, we don't believe that there's such a thing as a question without an answer. And this also has to do, like I was saying, has to do with the humility, right? Mm-hmm. Being slightly less in love with the first thought you had is called humility. And since so many Eden, that's what he reminded me of, since so many Eden have had like basic questions and have said, therefore, it must be that I'm the first one that had this question and they're such good questions. They fell in love with their like first thoughts or first questions, which is themselves, like, which is, and now there's no way to get through it. But if you have a little less gava, and you say like, well, of course they're good questions, and also you have the ability to learn from someone else because you're less of a bal gava.
No, for real,
for sure.
You have to love your friend's thoughts just as much as you loved your first thoughts too.
Yeah, for sure. Thoughts don't even belong to anyone.
That's what's called good batoide, right?
Yes, yes, 100%. Yes, right. For sure. Really.
I think it's even.
You're after that. You're after the thought, not after having the best kashas.
Who said that?
I'm saying that's.
I forgot that really my plan was to say Asira and Yitzhak Shalom and how that's the Rav of Shatna Adliya, I guess.
It's even a higher level.
You're getting into it.
You're loving his thoughts.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
After even your.
Okay, we'll get to that.
You have the ability to ask some questions.
First,
there's
considering his thoughts, and then you're
the right time.
You reminded me. So let's say the main point where we are. The main point where we are is that these like impossibilities are only impossibilities are not the end of this discussion. They're the beginning of the discussion. And we know that they're not the beginning. One is because we have the question. You know, that the Ishbet Rebbe said that Avraham Avinu had a question, mi bala bira. He wasn't the first one to have the question, but he was the first one to believe that the question has a meaning. The fact that he has the question means that there's an answer to the question. Because why would we have such a question? Things that aren't answerable are not questions either. And well, he says it in a different, slightly different way, but let's interpret this. Right? If there's a question, and you...
What do you mean a question that's not answerable? That goes back into you.
A question that answerable is a trick question. Something like... Reb Nachman talks about this. He has an example.
Pythagoras?
No, a question like, why is this purple? It's not impossible to answer because it's just not purple. And there's ways of making this very fancy and really making you, tricking you that you had a good question. Like, I don't have the example in my head right now. There's all kinds of questions that are, if you you'll notice that nobody ever really wondered about them because they're not really making sense.
And those mathematical things that you
can't. Why is there no
kids ask such questions?
Is that mean like
no,
really is
most
a way
of the
to get
time
out?
They ask good questions. Mm-hmm. We just
mean,
don't
why
like
is
them.
Purple?
But it's not. I am good. Or like, I don't have a good example right now. I don't have a good example. Come back a different time. I'm not figured mm-hmm. out.
And those mathematical trick questions, are those trying to tell you that really there's an answer for it?
No, they're tricks. They're just tricks.
No, the Pythagoreans, like with the half stuff, yeah? Like,
I forgot the example right now. I'm not sure what you're trying to tell me about Pythagoras. If I said, look, you say me a name of a tzaddik.
Even with the numbers, right?
And therefore?
And I think they did, like, he had a very basic problem about the guy that, if he goes from here to here, and every time he goes
You're talking about someone else. In any case, no.
No.
Let's leave things.
So which tzaddik was that?
Someone else, exactly.
Okay, I thought it was him. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter the tzaddik's name.
No, that's a good question. That's actually a good question. And there's actually an answer to it. Of course, the answer isn't... Okay, no, let's not. It's not very good. Let's not get stuck. And what I wanted to say is something else. Right. So I think
specifically.
No, but
I
just we're going to get stuck. It's not a good example for a bad question. That's for sure. Let's not get stuck, or at least not right now. Maybe we'll figure out.
How much is 100 divided in 3?
Yeah, that might be a good question. It's a good question. There's actually ways of making progress in that question also, right? We could get closer to the truth of that question, or even if we might not be able to answer it absolutely. So, but all these examples are not probably helping me right now. Point is something else. The point is, there might be a solution to this kind of problem, and the first place we're going to notice that there's a solution is that we'll find a guy that actually went through the problem, or managed to make progress in the problem, okay? Now, this thing word we call progress is a very, very important word. Because even refining the problem better is progress, right? You could notice this in different kinds of conversations. There are conversations that go to circles, and there are conversations which make progress. And many people have not figured out the difference, or probably have never had the opportunity of having a conversation that makes progress from basic questions. You know, Socrates' dialogues are always examples of making progress. Although he always ends up in the same place he started, almost always, he always makes progress on the way. Which means that now we have a better way of asking the question, or we know exactly what we're looking for. Sometimes we might even end the discussion. In other words, find the answer. And we got to learn how to make progress. What I wanted to say was that one of the things that we can do is believe that we're allowed to ask the questions or make some kind of space where the needing to already use the answer is not bothering us. That is one thing. The other thing is what she said was using other people, which is maybe part of it. But I'm going to have to stop right now. How you use other people?
Yeah.
Good question. Use other people by having two people on two sides of an argument. We're
talk about
anything. Right. In other words, me just thinking of something by myself, I'm almost... This is just a practical thing. I don't know yet the whole theory that she has about this. But me, thinking with myself, I'm almost always going to be very stuck in the ways that I started thinking of it. Therefore, usually tend to go in circles. But me talking with other people, especially people who actually think or actually have thought or have written books, which is a way of talking with us across the time, is going to probably allow me to have a space between the answer that I'm already using and the kind of answers that someone else has. Maybe it's a different answer, maybe it's a different question.
Usually that turns into like an argument, no?
Yeah.
If it's an argument, whoever's smarter will probably win, though. What do you do about that?
Whoever's smarter wins arguments only in rhetorical arguments, not in philosophical arguments. No. Right? Because winning an argument, like Rabbi Nathan said, right? You could win an argument, but not win the argument. Right?
Also,
not sure what you mean. But in any case, the...
Like people, and not from people that do arguments.
Right, right. I'm trying to put my thinking somewhere else. But in any case, there's
beginning?
This concept. I don't know. In any case, yeah, there's such a thing. And the of course, this has a lot to do with humility, like we're discussing. Because when you have an argument with a little child, who usually asks questions, most of the time I lose the argument. Me when I argue with little kids or even like little teenagers or whatever, little kids that come to my sheet, I most of the time lose the argument. So you're the hissed. Now I'm telling you, you didn't know. I didn't let you on. Most of the time lose the argument. Very serious. Doesn't mean that I'm wrong. That doesn't mean that I'm wrong, right? You remember the difference between philosophical argument and law court argument. The difference is that in the law court we're trying to convince someone third person, which means our discussion is really happening outside of the arguments we're making. There's going to be some of Adi Yosef in the end that can just count how many rice you have and how many rice you have and decide. So therefore even bad rice are useful. But you're not really convincing anyone. You're not convincing your opponent, right? The philosophy is this crazy kind of trust we have in other people, which is I'm one Baldin, you're another Baldin, and we are ourselves going to argue it out, which means the argument itself has to carry the whole truth, right? Of course, we have to both be seeking truth, we have to both be following the argument, because theoretically, we don't even have to be seeking truth. We only have to be committed to listening, like we said last time. We only have to be committed to following the argument. And which means, losing the argument just means you were not convinced. Now, of course, maybe you were not convinced because I didn't make the argument well. Doesn't mean that I'm wrong in the opinion that I'm defending, but it does mean that I'm lost because maybe you came with a question that I...
And like the second the other person, let's say, is not willing to listen, then the argument goes nowhere.
Yeah, then it's not an argument. Then it becomes just a shouting match.
Right.
Exactly. We're talking about...
Right.
Which a shouting match is another way of saying, instead of me convincing you or making arguments, let's refer to the loudest screamer. Like it's another like objective, some kind of third party which will... Instead of thinking, we'll do something
the
else.
First person as well.
Yeah,
so
because then you're not trying to find out anything. No, we're just screaming at me. Okay, so screaming at me. Right. Yeah. It's true, but most people don't notice when the children, like, right? Most people don't even notice when the Tinnik won because he asked a stupid argument, and you're probably still right. So that doesn't mean that you don't have to know how to answer it. And there are people that know how to answer.
That's right, but in her way of the solution, right? In her way of saying what she's saying. No, because the idea here, I'm just trying to understand something like more in a final way, is the idea here that you like get exposed to another way of living?
No, not necessarily. The idea is that that's supposed to save us from the loop where we're using, because she's using the other person to stand in to be a free state relative to you, right? I'm not worried. I need to know for myself. So I have my own opinion. I need to know for myself how to live. I don't need to know how you live, right? That's not acute for me, right? The problem that we're having is that I already need to know Shadavi Mencha. So instead of arguing with myself, Shadavi Mencha, I'm not an atheist, I'm a man. You'll be the atheist. You don't have to Shadavi Mencha. So now our argument can be between two real people who have two different, is really the other option really exists, right? What's the problem? That in my life, the option that there's no God, therefore no Davi Mincha, doesn't make sense. Right? But in your life, it could. You're a different person. You're not me. You're an atheist. You don't have a Mincha. You never have a Mincha in your life. No problem. So now we could have a fair argument. Right? At least that's the theory, or that's some of the theory. There might be more to it. But it's really...
In other words, you live life differently.
No, I'm not worried about... I'm not learning from your work. Well, the problem, of course, this... There's a question on this theory that she has, which is that how is it when if it's going to get to me, we're going to end up in the same problem. It's not clear if it's resolved. It's a question. But at least the argument could make more sense because it's not the same person who is defending both sides of that, who's on both sides of the argument, which is what we this ideal.
The same type of person, then.
Not the same type of person. The same person. If it's me, I'm on both sides of the argument, right? How could I even? Like pretend to try be able to find out to have the freedom to choose between the options of davening mincha and not davening mincha. I'm already davening mincha, but the other person is not davening mincha, so he's entirely on that side. And then from some kind of art of argument, which is maybe a third thing which we have to figure out, but at least it solves us some of this problem. That's the theory. It's, if it works, if it's, it needs to have some lechet, we'll find out. I didn't really come here to defend that solution. I just came here to show that this has to do... I think that most of this has to do with being... I actually think that it might be I don't know if that's the only solution. It might be a solution. We have to work on it, see if it works. And I think that the first part of the solution is to be able to not know. And it works for us by splitting between the kind of beliefs, right? Plato really had a different solution. It's not clear. She says that this is Socrates' solution, but it's very clearly in the Plato, or the later the Muslim tradition, they very clearly had a different solution, which was that I could split between the kind of beliefs I needed for action and the kind of beliefs needing for knowledge. Right? Remember this. Okay, I'm going too fast now. I'm going to just stop here. I could believe, that's why I said it's a different solution, really, I think. But you're splitting off knowledge from opinion and saying that I could believe something without knowing it. And therefore, but when I'm working on knowledge, I don't need to be worried about the belief, because belief is a different kind of register. It's a different kind of thing. And or another way of saying this would be, and that belief will have to allow me to think. That's true. This is why the great religious of last Thursday wrote these two side psokim. Mitzad religion, where we have a psak halacha that you're allowed to think. And we also have a psak halacha from the thought that we're allowed to be religious. Because it's a different kind of olam. And this allowed them that kind of freedom, I think. And the very big part of it was to not confuse, this is the different style, not her style, this is the Platonic style, not confuse opinion with knowledge, or not confuse faith with knowledge. Not to say that you know when you don't know. You could say you believe, which is very nice, and even makes sense to believe, but you don't know. And this was the Rambam's Pshat on Rabbi Akiva.
It doesn't touch each other.
I will talk about
it. It runs parallel with each other.
Yes, they're different. They don't entirely not touch each other. It's of course more complicated than this. I'm just saying. There's the Rambam. Can we just finish this? The Rambam said, "What did Rabbi Akiva do to you to be yotzei v'sholem?" Amashal loyshem roma loyshem atia. Lamad loshen chloema ani yada. The Rambam said. The Rambam actually interprets this as a discussion of chiddush ha'olam, and he understands like this, that there's a problem with chiddush ha'olam, which is that there's no good proofs for it. There might be no proofs against it, but they're not. Or not good enough proofs against it, but there's also no proofs for it, which means that we cannot know it. Some people are just in denial, so they don't know nothing. But some people are nichas lepadis, which means they learn massive rashis. And therefore, there's three groups. One group is apikarsim, because they're the kind of people that only believe things that they have proof for. And therefore, but the problem is that they're wrong, they don't even have proof, they also jump to a conclusion. They're so impressed by the fact that they can frig up their Rebbe that they think that that's a way of life already. Then there's another group of people, which is very frame, but they die. In other words, their cycle dies. In other words, why? Because they force themselves to know things which are unknowable. And once you pretend to know something that's unknowable, you ruined your capacity to know. Or in our context, it would mean something like you take away the entire space in which knowledge is possible. Right, so now nothing you say is real. People that actually think that they know things which they really only believe, nothing they say is true. Because their evaluation of truth was broken. Right? The Rambam has examples of this, like for sure, for this medicate.
That's right? Azai.
Exactly. Then there's the Aliyah of Rabbi Akiva. What's Rabbi Akiva?
No,
Rabbi
Akiva is the Rambam first. One second. How do you
same thing.
Is it the same thing? Going crazy and dying?
Only three people in my story. Now, dying and going crazy are the same thing. One is Beirachnis and one is Gashmis, but they both mean the same thing. Now, there's only three people in my story. What should I tell you? There isn't a fourth person. The Gong Meshig is one version of dying. It doesn't matter. You could probably literally die. It doesn't matter. Then the solution, which is the Rakiba solution, is the Rambam solution. The Rambam solution is to say like this. If you ask me if I believe in Chiddush Ha'olam, of course I believe it. If you ask me if I know it, of course I don't know it. How should I know it? Even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know it. How would he know? He had Neviyah, which is a way of having good opinions, but he didn't know. Because it's not possible, according to him, it's not possible. And he even has this exact argument. He just says, for 3,000 years, people have been arguing about this. You're really the first, you're smarter than them? Are you crazy? This is the Rambam says. The Rambam that all the Mashgichim say that Shargah Frank Dalai Rais, this is what he says. He says, someone that goes around saying this proof of Chiddush Ha'olam is just stupid, because I don't think that something that 3,000 years philosophers are arguing about, you understand? You're overestimating your intellectual capacity. You don't know. Oh, if you believe, is it reasonable to believe? Maybe it's even reasonable to believe, but there's a difference between being reasonable to believe and knowing. And this is according to Rabbi Akiva's Mahalach. Whenever he got something that didn't understand, he just said, I don't understand. Nichnas b'shulim, v'yutzi b'shulim. V'shtaynish v'shtaych, nish v'nish. It was a problem. Then he never jumped to conclusions. Never jumped to conclusions. Nish l'kan, nish l'kan. Maybe next week we'll know. Maybe we'll learn more. For another 40 years, we'll know.
He also saw Matatun sitting, right? He also saw Matatun sitting. He had a question. He's like, I don't know.
No, he had a drusha. He had a drusha. That's a doisy with fishermen.
What do you mean by saying
you think
that?
You didn't see the same thing?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, too much information. Figure it out.
What do you mean by saying that there's proof of fish? I'm saying that there's a logical argument that can make sense that there's
logical argument that makes sense.
Or
okay,
proof
has,
in like
he has very strict
evidence.
He has very Rambam has very strict views of the word proof. But that's not getting into this. It means something very extreme by him.
Right, so how can we know what you mean here? No, I'm saying what do you mean by proof of Chiddush Olam? You mean that through logical argument or you think or by evidence?
I don't know if he has.
I'm saying so many Svarim do logical arguments with this. So if you call that proof, then
yeah, he means logical arguments, and he argues with those Svarim, and he says that those Svarim don't know what they're talking about. They know what they're talking about, but what they think is proofs are not really proofs. They might be like Svaris, but not proofs. That's the answer to that question. But that's a different subject. We don't know really anything about it right now. Just using it as a mushal. Or as an illustration of the principle. Today's the Pshat Chayavidish B'Sim Ad Liyud B'Mat Chafashtaz. We thought that you're a Yid, you know, there's the Mat Chanoman. Turns out, and right, now let's be clear. Then there's some other Rebbe Chochem that can tell you the story, right? Abushti thinks Mat Chavaz Atzad, Ekomim was Arusha, Mat Chavaz right, Mat Chumam was wrong, and it's very simple, right? Then you learn a little, and you start thinking, well, Mat Chavaz wasn't so right, Numan wasn't so wrong. I can even give you the arguments for whichever version of the Megillah there is. You'll come up here, I'll explain to you appeal the lambdas why Matcha was wrong and Hum was right, or at least there's a lot of shit that's what the Machloikis. But whatever the Machloikis was, not so clear that one of them was right and one of them was so wrong. Matcha wasn't so right and Hum wasn't so wrong. That's obvious, and he was not thinking really as this, right? Yeshne Amechad, it turns out to be entirely true, the whole thing. Anyway.
Who's not drinking the vein?
So wait, drink is not mushla. So therefore, what's the solution? So there's three solutions, the same three solutions. There are some people that said, "Oy bazoy, if a woman is right, then we should go to the ICC and tell them to zetzan matcha, because Human was right and matcha is doing a crime against humanity." Now, those people, what's their problem? Not that they don't have good arguments. The problem is that they jump to conclusions, because there's about as much evidence to put Human in the ICC as to put matcha. Oh, we'll put both. So, why? Why? Maybe one, yeah, one not. Why both? That's just a way of cupping out of the question, right? Both. Let's just be even side. Let's just. It's got you have to know, but if you don't know, then just be quiet, right? Then there's other people that are just like, no, and of course, we know for sure. They're just liars, right? Those people also don't have what to drink pinim because they're bluffing themselves and they're stumped, right? So what's this like? Kamarav Shach Rav Zaira is already dead. That Shomer Achorav Shach Rav Zaira is an instance of Yekubayin Hashem of Slavsi. This chat where he says, so what's the real solution? The real solution is, we don't know. We know exactly what we know. We know that we are on Matcha's side. Why? Because we were born there. It's a plan guns kid. That's all. We don't have proofs against them. Well, we have proofs, but then if you ask me like the truth, I'm not saying that we could win him in debate. But Hashem, we won him in the not debate, in the reality. But in debate, maybe we'll lose. So, and Shoyin is like, I'm very happy if you learn. By the way, this learning of how to live without is Mordigazach. You should learn it in every subject in life. And also act. You have to also act. You can't just say, I'm going to live without, I'm therefore going to shluff. No. You have to figure out what to do. And you figure out some rules. Hilchas Sfaikas. The Hilchas Sfaikas is the Kalotari Kele. Hilchas Sfaikas.
And by Oymik, this was also the Chanukah Drusha.
This is all the Drushas.
Right.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, Chanukah. Like, that whole thing with Rachmas Tlif Plus.
Thank you. Okay, so
we're always in our state.
Pause last my video.